legal consistency that can happen. Is that when I was questioned in a small room by a female officer? What are you talking about? And it was then and I said, you hold on that. And then when I was staying here on the last one, I felt the face change someone. And I said spirituality. Okay. Even the word Jehovah itself is a bit sensitive. So this is a discussion on spiritual wayfaring. And we've chosen a particular chapter from a particular book by Avraham and Tamar Tavori. And after centuries of books written on spiritual wayfaring, during these contemporary times, someone came and formulated a new structure, a new method on how to encounter spiritual wayfaring. A method that wasn't as evident before. There's nothing outside the Holy Quran. There's nothing outside the traditions from the Ahlul Bayt. But the methodology Avraham and Tamar Tavori has used is very sacred. And we're only going to touch upon parts of chapter 1 and obtain some benefits from what he's intending by mentioning this important point. And the point is on Iqtibarat. I've been using this word quite a bit, and what I mean is mental constructs. And what do mental constructs mean? I'll explain as we progress. Just, I think, this maybe is difficult for some people. So, let's start with a story. We'll come to this story and I'll refer to this story as we progress. It's only a story, but it can help you digest a lot of the difficult parts, which I'll be mentioning theoretically. But the story is important, and it should be easy for you to understand. But before I start the story, this hearing my own echo, if I just keep the level constant and not always increase or decrease, as I think it is. So, there was Person A who went to the public bath, and he entered the public bath and he was shown his cabin, and there he, before bathing himself, he went and slept. In his dream, he sees someone who looks just like himself. In his dream, he's seeing person B. Now, person B looks just like person A. But with person B, everyone is respecting person B. No one was respecting him. Now, in his dream, though, he sees someone exactly looking like him entering the public bath, but it's in his dream. And everyone is respecting him. So he's very curious as to who this person is. So when person B in person A's dream enters his cabin, out of curiosity, person A goes to see who this person is. And lo and behold, person A in his dream sees that person B is there. This person B who requires so much respect from the people. So what person A did was change clothes with person B, so that everyone would think now he is person B, and everyone would think that this person B who has died is now person A who has passed away. And so he changed the clothing, and then when people encountered him, they thought he was person B, so they gave him a lot of respect. When he finished the bathing, they took him in his own private vehicle, his own car, his own people, his own driver, Then they took him to his house and a big house. Then he saw he was an engineer, he was a doctor. He saw his own certificate. He saw his own wife, children. All these things he was seeing. All of a sudden, Person A was hit on the head. And the employee said, "Wake up, you've been sleeping all this time." That's the story. Now, what if they keep on coming back to this story? Just in case it becomes a bit heavy sometimes theoretically, it'll help you to understand what the whole point of gate, the bottle, and mental constants are. Okay, so the first question is that Allah Tabari, he made his book, the treatise, the Salatul Walayah, the treatise in spiritual wayfaring. But it covers spiritual wayfaring on a theoretical and a practical angle. So it's a practical book also in spiritual wayfaring. It's only 5 chapters, but each of these chapters has volumes and allusions of very important, subtle, delicate prescriptions for me and you. In this first chapter, why should Allah deem it important to discuss what we call mental constructs? Why should this be? It's like in spiritual wayfaring, your first step, without which you can't progress fruitfully, is mental. What aspect of mental constructs is it that is so important that one can't progress spiritually without? So here we want to discuss what mental constructs are first, and then we'll come to its understanding and its practical purpose as we go forward. First though, before explaining what they are, I have to give a comparison between plants and humans primarily. First, to understand what we mean by it, the Bhagavad, what we mean by mental constructs. With plants, whatever is in creation, whatever is moving. Sometimes we see that movement, like with plants, humans, animals. Sometimes we don't see the movement, it's not visible, like stones which move and evolve moment to moment. But before it becomes visible, that movement may take many hundreds of thousands, not millions of years. But everything as an end goal that is moving toward. With plants and apple seed, for example, the objective is to become an apple tree that is perfection for this plant. But with this apple seed, all that it needs to reach its perfection, being the apple tree and becoming the apple tree, all that it needs is readily available before you in real terms. So it has real soil, real water, real light, real food. Everything is real. And it encounters it, and it grows, and it acquires its objective, which is becoming an apple tree. With humans, the story is different. It doesn't encounter these real existence. That's not the whole story with humans. With humans, first, that perfection, that objective. It was the apple tree for the apple seed. With humans, the goal is becoming God-like. All of the divine attributes of Allah, to incorporate those, that is our goal. The more we incorporate those divine attributes, the closer we become. Becoming closer to Allah isn't a verbal exercise. It's a real exercise where the soul has to undergo changes. Those changes are incorporated into divine attributes. The more you incorporate them, the more proximity you have with Allah. That's the goal. That's the perfection that humans want. However, unlike the plant, humans aren't readily available before, or things aren't readily available for humans so that they automatically become a family home. It's not as easy like with the plants. In contrast, the plants, with humans, the story is different. Here, humans, they have to first integrate into society. Otherwise, they can't reach at any level of spiritual importance. How are you going to be a manifestation of Allah's patience, generosity, and all those other attributes if you never encounter people? Though monasticism has its benefits too, but you can't reach perfection through it. So you have to integrate with society and be with the people. And once you're with the people, automatically, you're a Muslim or a non-Muslim, or even if you're in an area where there's no religion, this is to do with man, even the pre-religion man. When you're in society, with living with people in a society, even if there's no religion. Here, there are a number of mental constructs that you make, you construct, without which you can't survive, neither materialistically nor spiritually. You need these mental constructs. One of them is the idea of ownership. For example, there's a piece of land. What is it which makes this your land and not someone else's land? Why can someone else can just come and say, no, this is my land, and takes it from you? Or for example, your spouse, marriage. What stops someone just coming and saying, no, this is my spouse? Here, in order to avoid chaos and bedlam, to reach one's temple, man comes and constructs something called ownership. The idea of ownership is constructed by man. Otherwise, nothing is added to the real world. It's something which is conceived of. Otherwise, if there was no conceiver of ownership, ownership wouldn't exist. That which exists in the real world, person and a piece of land. Ownership is conceived of to avoid that chaos and bedlam, so that one can, it facilitates one's journey to reach one's end goal. But if no one conceives of it, it won't even come into existence in the first place. But existence, in contrast to things that exist around us in the real world, these existing things are conceived and they depend upon a conceiver. In contrast to the sun, the moon, the piece of glass, the computer, me, you, but these things, irrespective of whether you conceive of them or not, they are in the physical world. But some things you have to conceive of them for them to be. Ownership is one such construct. That which exists in the real world is piece of land and a human being. But the idea of an owner and owned property and ownership, these have to be constructed of. Why did the pre-religion man, so to speak, deem it important to make this construct? It was to facilitate one's journey to perfection. Otherwise it would be total bedlam. Everyone would have a claim on each other's land. That's why marriage also is a mental concept. Otherwise people will make a claim of one another's spouses and so on. And so we see that here, there are, if you focus on your mind, you see that whether you know it or not, you're totally drowned in an ocean of mental constructs. Now we have to discuss in the next part why is this important, what threat is posed by such mental constructs. But first I just wanted to explain what mental constructs are. With animals, it's a gray area. Plants don't have mental constructs. That's a difference. Humans do. With animals, it's a gray area. It's not as simple as saying they just work through instinct. You take the bee, for example, and study the life of a bee. And go into the bee kingdom and study it very carefully. Right? It's a leader, a queen bee. Leadership is also a mental construct. And this queen bee has gods. God is an initial construct. Then those gods, or bees, they flap their wings at a certain rate. They do things less than what is asked of them. There are other bees which punish those bees and kill them. Punishment is an initial construct. And there are many other indices that we can easily tell that with animals too, they have some form of mental construct, but it may not be as developed as ours. The more complex the life of a given animal is, the more complex and the more quantitative these mental constructs are. Okay, so as a first question, if you speak with your partner, the person next to you, in twos or threes, but I'm not sure whether this will work or not, but it doesn't, then we'll just begin the interaction with each other. I want you to discuss amongst yourselves. Then I'll ask you with your findings. You think of other mental constructs that we are taking for granted and we're living by them in our daily lives. Only 2 minutes, okay? We'll go to the next question. Leadership doesn't exist in the external realm. Something is conceived of. That which exists is only people. Like, ownership doesn't exist in the real sense. So why it does exist, but not in the real sense of the external realm. Anyone can maybe think of other? Yes, sir. Can you think of any other examples? No? Yes? Genocide, a very good example of oppression. That's a very deep example. You see, although we'll come to that and show that later, but when we say A oppresses B, this term oppression, which has happened, where A has oppressed B, this oppression is also a mental. Yes, in the real world, someone stuck a knife, for example, into someone else and killed someone. And we call that oppression. There's nothing wrong with mental constructs. I'll tell you with what the threat is later. But we then mentally construct a term called oppression, and we say oppression is bad. But we're oblivious to why it's bad. The reason why it's bad will come in question 3. It's a bit early for me to enter that discussion now. But any more simple example? Yes, education, for example. Yes, that's the construct. for my certificate. Certificate is a mental construct. You say that I acquired, this is my certificate. This certificate, this title, there's no such thing in the real world. You either learn something or you haven't learned something. Otherwise, this certificate has no real existence. That which has real existence is what one has actually learned. But we've constructed this idea of a certificate, a job, salary, and other things like it, with a certain agenda in mind, in reaching that perfection. However, we're oblivious of the threat that we're facing when we build these mental constructs, which will come to later. Any other example? Yes, traffic lights, that's okay. It's a construct of some sort. And confuse some people because we do have a traffic light. So, leadership, ownership, certificates, jobs, spouses, children, oppression, all these are mental constructs. And I'm sure if you go deep into your own daily lives, you'll find a lot more. Okay, we'll just leave that for now, but we'll come back. To keep on coming back. So in that dream that we were speaking about, that if the model which the dreamer was meeting, that construct and in dreaming the dreamer is constructing, is the spouses that person he was building for himself, the children, his position, his job, his prestige, his honor. It's all constructed. The next question is man a social animal or an individual animal by nature? With your permission, we'll skip this. I want to put this for you to discuss yourself. Maybe we'll leave that for this question. Is man a social animal or an individual animal by nature, by essence? Here, the theologian may say in their books that man is a social animal. But the Gnostics, the oracle, and you know, these scientists have their own criteria. Each, they're saying the truth, but depending on what their criteria is, they come up with different conclusions. The oracle, they say that the man is individual by nature, as it was. And that they're not social animal essence ones, but they're coerced to integrate into society. Not that they're social animals by nature, they're coerced, they're forced to integrate into society to reach the end goal. Because of that, so secondarily, they have to become social. Otherwise, by nature, they're individual. This can be seen in many verses of the Holy Quran. I've listed a few of them here. So, in Ahsantum, Ahsantum lakum khusikum. You did good, you did it for your own self. If you give charity to someone, you're not benefiting another person. You are good. And if you give back to someone, you're not really doing back to that person. You're doing back to yourself. And if you did bad, it's also for your own self. That's why that oppression or genocide example is very important. Every good that you do, A, does good to B. B isn't the recipient of good. It's A who is growing, the one who is doing that. Whether B does good or receives good or not depends on how B takes that action. So for example, at t equals 0, time equals 0, A does a good action, or does the best. Either way, for example, with the Christian example, A does a bad action, A equals him. Then the next moment, or the next hour, or the next whatever, in time, that's A equals one. How did you, you either are a recipient of that bad action, or you are a third party just overlooking that bad action? How did you receive that bad action? If you took that bad action and condoned it and approved of it, said it was good, only then person B, that recipient, has done something bad. Not at T equals zero, only at T equals one. Or if I do something good, only the next moment, depending on how the recipient takes that action, they will have done something good or bad. Otherwise, when A does something good, only A is benefiting, and T equals zero. No one else is benefiting. And if A does something bad, and T equals zero, no one is suffering. And no one is a recipient of something bad. But at T equals one, it all starts for the recipient. How did they look at that action? How were they affected by that action? And only then, depending on how the recipient made an intention or committed an action, only then it will affect them. So here, you see it's all about you and the soul. Is nothing related to you outside your soul. In this world, you are the director. It's all to do with your soul and your actions. If they're good, they build you. If they're bad, they destroy you. But it all depends on you and your actions. No one outside you can benefit you. And no one outside you can oppress you in real terms. If you were benefited, or if you suffered from someone else's actions, it was a result of your own intentional actions, not because of what they did. So oppression too is a mental construct. But here we have to understand that this oppression bad. Why? Because the oppressor is oppressing oneself. The oppressor isn't automatically oppressing anyone else, because the oppressor can't oppress anyone else. That someone else has done something, has thought in a particular manner, and that has led to his or her oppression, loss, or his or her benefit. But it's all to do with you. Everyone to themselves. If you do good, you do it for your own self. But if you did bad, you do it back to your own self. This thing of society and integrating with your own self, no. Because apart from you, no one can have that effect upon you. All depends on you. In another verse, chapter 664, Walau taziru wazeratun wizra ukhra. This is in relation to the hereafter. No bearer of burdens will bear the burdens of others. In the hereafter, it's only you and your actions. The hereafter is also a manifestation of your actions. Iqra kitabak, the hereafter, is your book. Your book of intentions and actions that you've done, the soul, the book of your existence, just unraveling. But what anyone else did to you, that has no effect. It's only what you and your soul incorporated in this world. On Someone did something bad to you. What was your position? When someone did something good to you, what was your position? Those positions are very important in shaping your head. But you're not going to bear the burdens of others. You're only going to bear your own actions, your own intentions. It's not all clear to mention. Bear with me, brother. That's why mental constructs are important. Because with mental constructs, you're going to realize a very important fact that the way you've lived all your life has to be retuned in a particular way, which we're coming to. Just go through other verses. While they sat there in Sana, in the Mosel, unity with man is nothing. Same that which is driven. That which is active, that which is done, that's it. That is that which is in unity, live in itself. Nothing else. Your actions will only have an effect on your soul. And that hereafter is also how you've incorporated within your soul. But how you've acted for yourself, that's all that matters. In another verse, chapter 5, verse 5, your ayyuhal ladina amanu, so you who have believed, alaykum anfusakum. Be attentive, or solely be attentive, on yourself, your soul. That's all that matters. Be attentive to what you're incorporating within yourself. And then those who are deviating can't harm you when you're guided. If you're guided and someone does something wrong, they can't harm you at all. But the condition is you have to be guided. How do you have to be guided? It's how you look at mental constructs. Just take this for now. And broadly, only if you're guided, when other people do you harm, it won't affect you. But if you're not guided, and people, in quotes, oppress you and do you wrong, then you will be affected. And that leads to spiritual downfall. If you focus on yourself alone, on being guided, whatever anyone does, it can't harm you in any way, even if it's genocide. But the reason why genocide is harming people is because they're not guided. And this guidance is very closely intertwined with these mental constructs. Okay? Other verses alluding to the fact that man is individual by the way. Social animal. In the Quran, and all of them will come to him, come to Allah, on the day of resurrection, individually. And the hereafter, our reality in the hereafter is the same way as here. One reality. Our description in the hereafter, pay close attention to it. That's how we should be in this one. In the hereafter, we come to Allah individually. Yes, we may be assembled, everyone, assembled somewhere, but it's all an individual union with Allah. That goes to the point that it's between you and your soul. And all the actions that you've done, incorporating those actions in this world, all your potential in the hereafter. It's not like how we encounter with people in this world socially. Encountering in the hereafter won't be like that. It's only the soul manifesting. And that's how you're going to meet up. That's what union means. It depends on the degree of how the soul grew in this realm. خوراد و کما خلقناکم اول مره. Very indeed, you have put us individually as we created you first time around. So even there, in the hereafter, let's be individuals, meaning you and your soul, or what the soul did. Now, as we created you first time around, and during gestation, this is what we want to understand. But during gestation, we were like the plants at that stage. With no mental concepts, there's no idea of us being societal. Yeah, in these verses, when we encounter our Lord individually, it's taken away that societal dimension. Also, when the fetus, they're like plants for a moment of time, where there are all that is feces is readily available for it to grow as one point. Secondly, it doesn't enter the need to integrate into society yet, the features in gestation. There's no need to construct any mental constructs, because that societal dimension is taken off. There's no societal dimension in the hereafter either. But this societal dimension is only in this world, not in the hereafter. Everything is individual. Why do we have it in this world? We have to reach that perfection. Since we have to integrate, because we're not like plants, everything being there readily available for us to reach perfection, we have to integrate into society. As a result of this having to integrate into society, we construct these mental constructs. And there are many other verses in the Holy Quran. And too much time, but you can go through those verses. But here in chapter 80, when it speaks of when the hour comes, when the blast from the hereafter comes, there it describes a tatini, providential law, that everything will flee from man, one's spouse, one's children, one's brother, just everyone. That's not it. It's going to be a social encounter, and then we escape from people, like we escape from this world. So this is a natural cause and effect process. It's only you anyway. Spouses, as we know of it, in this world, don't exist in the hereafter. Children, as we know of it in this world, don't exist in the hereafter. Why? Because all these were mental constructs. Marriage, children, offspring, these were mental constructs. Otherwise there's one man, one woman, a procreator, a procreated, then he can't give these mental constructs to a father and a mother. Fatherhood is a mental construct. Motherhood is a mental construct. And these constructs won't exist in the hereafter as they do here. Then consanguinity, kinship in chapter 23, and when one fellow and salva they know, there's no consanguinity in the hereafter. There's no kinship. These are mental constructs. Or in chapter 2, 254, and yet the yaumon, no bayon fee, they will come thereafter. There's no buying or selling. But buying and selling is a mental construct. Ownership is a mental construct. There's no friendship, because friendship, enmity, these are mental constructs. Walo shafa'atun, shafa'a is a mental construct. It's not as if we're into the hereafter, and now we're looking for a shafi'. It has to have been acquired in this world. The reality of shafa'a is something to be acquired in this world, not at the end of the hereafter, then we start looking for it. So here we see there are many verses here. Everything has to be acquired here. It has to be acquired through the soul. And whatever is incorporated, it will be manifested. However, for man to reach that perfection, he has to enter society. One. And secondly, he has to build these mental models. If he doesn't build them, he won't progress towards perfection. Be it materialistic or spiritual perfection. But the problem is that one gets drowned in the very things that one is coerced to construct. And when you get drowned in the mental concepts, you forget what they were representing in that period of superstition. This drowning is this great. This is just another verse. In Amalatamutawa, in one of his works, he sees the trap of Ekthamora, the trap of these mental constructs, has been laid out wide, and man is deeply exposed to it. On a permanent scale, however much society becomes complex, and however much man advances, these hits of our art become proportionally more and more complex due to man's novel and emerging complex needs. And these hits of our art terminate in every minute detail of man's public and private life. Now, this is something significant. Now, we're slowly going to enter the discussion, the main point. So, question number three, precisely ascertain what threat is, and give examples of such a threat. So if you just discuss with your partner only for 1 or 2 minutes, what do you think the threat of these mental constructs actually are? And try to give examples of only 1 or 2 minutes. So sometimes we're going to motherhood or fatherhood. Because motherhood, fatherhood, these are mental constructs too. And then you reach a point, you shouldn't, but you need to reach a point where you say, since she's my mother, she's my father, I want to do this for her, no matter what. But you get drowned from your mother. You may become oblivious to the responsibilities which Islam has outlined. One is yet to see why Islam has paid attention to being a mother or being a father. It's important to manage spiritual perfection and reaching Allah. But then you've taken motherhood, fatherhood, spousehood, children, whatever, and then is becoming grounded in the construct and oblivious of how this entity, this living entity, is of great importance for me to reach out of. You get grounded in the construct of Mother, and then you start doing things in the name of Mother, being oblivious to your spiritual journey through her. Yes, that's very good. Thank you. Sarah? Yes, yes. Sarah also. Sarah, she knows when Allah, through his prophet, when he wants to come and tell his prophet to speak to the people, he tells the prophet to speak in the language of the people. But that's all we know. It's something innately within all of us, even the pre-religious and man understands that they have to construct English, marriage, and all these things. And Islam comes and helps in the language of Ikhtabara, brings things like Salat and charity, physical actions, the spiritual end goal. The physical actions are real. The spiritual end goal is real. But they've come and labeled it Salat. That's Salat in the construct. It is an Ikhtabara. Because religion has come and disclosed itself in the language of Ikhtabara. But that's the language we understand best. Now, you come with Salah. If you drown in the title of Salah, being oblivious to the reality of Salah, that can lead to all sorts of spiritual illnesses. One that the sister was mentioning was Riyadh, showing off with that title and oblivious to the inner, real, spiritual benefits that you are to gain. So Salat is where you have a mirage. You're using Salat to the other way. The Ikhtabara has predominated over you. Not what the Ikhtabara is trying to signify. And you've become wrong. And there are many other examples too, for example, with knowledge. That certificate can be a source of your honor, greed, pride, and everything. When you get drowned in the certificate, you get drowned in your title, your job. Whereas that certificate was supposed to be you, your real endeavor towards acquiring knowledge. But then you got drowned in the edge of all, oblivious of its reality, and that leads to other. Because it of all, and these mental concepts, then the mental. So here, and if you get drowned in them, you're living in imaginary life. The goal is not to be drowned in them. You need them, but you shouldn't be drowned in them. You have to be attentive to what they represent. And what they represent is found nowhere but in yourself, in your soul. And that way, if you only be attentive to yourself, whereas when you get drowned in the Ikhtabara, you're attentive to other people. You want other people to see you as a leader, to see you with this certificate, to see you with all those other things. So there are two verses which show this aspect of the Ikhtabara very explicitly. Yes. Yes. And you need them because you can't survive. At least you better. You can't survive. You need a spouse. You need to buy a stuff. You need a certificate. If you have a certificate, you need a job. You need a job. All these are important. You can't imagine not having funds, everything being readily available. And also, you have to integrate the system. You always keep away from it. You want spiritually survive. You want to incorporate many divine attributes to become a better person. That's what we need. Even in good and bad, what is good and bad depends on this aspect of yourself. But it will become more of a mission as we go here. This world can't reach its perfection yet. In this world, we need to know this world. In chapter 29, verse 64, while all the Ohio Plutonio, in the backward, this worldly life is nothing but diversion and play. Diversion is something which prevents you reaching that end goal. Play is what children do. When in Arabic we call something a play, when the set of actions whose end goal, whose objective is imagined. When children play with toys, they call one of the toys father, one of the toys mother, they call construct. The father has a job, goes out and playing with toys and then or with his Nintendo game, stays in family. All constructing, you know. And then the mother calls them and then they just all the toys is that and they go for it. It's all imaginary. This worldly life, it's all a diversion for you to reach perfection, not the world, the worldly life. It's a diversion because it prevents you reaching perfection. It's the game, what you imagine. What game? It's the game of mental constructs. That dreamer who was, I remember the dream I started off with, who dreamt that prestige, honor, the most person made, he constructed a prestigious and honored person who has transported. He had this job, he had wives, children, and so on and so forth. It was all a dream, it was all a construct. And actually, most of us were living in a dream here. I was sleeping, and I was living in this worldly life. Essentially, one takes a few hours, another a few years. But only when we die, we realize that it was all a dream, how we were living in this world. And not only young people asleep, yet all more fools in terror. Only when they die, they wake up. And they wake up and see all our lives, 80, 90, 100 years, it was put to us. You are in this imaginary world here. Drowned in the depth of our art. Drowned in the mental constructs of our building process. It was all an idea. It was all a play. My certificate, my wife, my husband, my children, my car, my land, my house. I did this. I did that. Living that all these mental groups, but nothing is yours. Those constructs, you got drowned in those constructs. Those constructs were only to be made in just to survive. Without them, okay, you couldn't. But to get drowned in them, that's the world divine. But you built the world divine, it's in here. You built it. Imagine the world, a dream you don't see. وَإِنَّ الدَّارَ الْآخِرَةَ لَهِيَ الْحَيَاةُ. And those here are the only they know, they won't. Most people won't get that. It's so true. To realize, I hope they hear that. They hear that. They hear that. It's the life of your soul. They hear that. There's nothing outside your soul. That's the true life that you have to be paying attention to in this world. I mean, common perception is only attentive to yourself. You do something good, you're growing, not anyone else. You do something bad, you're being calm, not anyone else. Or in another chapter, 30, verse 7, Ya alamuna, dhahira min al hayati dunya. They know the outer dimension, the outer aspect of the world they live. Wa hum anil akhirati hum ghafilun. These people, in relation to the hereafter, they're oblivious. The hereafter here is used in opposition to the outer aspect of the world they live. The hereafter in the world means the inner aspect of the world they live. What those constructs are signifying. Which aspect of the soul is being signified to grow. They only get the mental constructs and they get boundaries without paying attention to the dimension of their soul, the certificate, the job, the mother, the father, who wants to build you, all made for you to be elevated. You're oblivious to that elevation of the soul, and you're drowned in family, spouse, children, jobs, prestige, honor, so on and so forth. It's only the outer aspect of the world. When it comes to elevation of the soul, you are the biggest, the inner aspect of the world. And that's what hereafter is. There's nothing outside you constituting the hereafter. Now, the practical benefits, just in case you haven't understood by now what they are, is that why do we have in the traditions of the Hanumi that burdens, maybe bad health, maybe depression, maybe anything, but why are burdens described as the finest way to spiritually elevate? And we have gentle traditions on this. Why would they be saying that, Ali Yosara, when there's a lot of depression going on in the field of Karbala? Why would she say that all I'm seeing is beauty? What is she seeing that most people are oblivious to? Why do you say that what I'm seeing here is all oppression? She could say that. Maybe she did say it to the lay person. When she wants to give her spiritual status quo, for me and you to reach this level and not to confine ourselves to level of the lay person, then she raises the question. Everything I'm seeing here. Why are burdens the finest way to elevate? Based on what you've said on Ekramala, why should burdens be a fine way to spiritually cleanse oneself? So give you one or two messages in your life. beauty right now. Okay, so the question is that, why, theoretically or potentially, should penitence be a route of spiritual purification? That's the question. He grows spiritually. Look, a burden, any physical. Yes. Yeah, think about this. Yes. Yes. Coping and patience, but how can you be patient when you don't have the tools for patience? You want to know. Yeah, I think these numbers are definite, but. This is getting to the roots here. This is why I always mention this is the first step. All these things we've been taught all our lives. Be patient, faith, of reliance, everything. Until we know how this is to be done, how we have to. These states arise when in reality, physical, external. eternal world. Nothing has been added but a title. And nothing has been taken away from but a title. So the close affinity we have with these mental constructs. Now, with burdens, what happens is that what is supposed to happen, but it doesn't change. But this is something we have to learn. When a given burden arises, one has to see that that which one is encountering is nothing but an interval. It's nothing but a construct. And it has no effect on that which is in relation to one's own soul. It's a construct at the end of the day. Then that should not allow one to become disappointed or happy or so on and so forth. So when illness, for example, is a construct, something is really happening in the body, and we give a bar to that, and we call it, let's say, cancer. Cancer is a reality in the life, and something real. We give this gift of our cancer, and we treat it in a way, once we get drowned in it, it's affecting the soul, but it shouldn't be. Whether you let it affect your soul, or you don't let it, it all depends on how associated or disassociated you are with those . The more you're associated, the more affinity you acquire and build with those constructs, the more difficult it will be for you at times of birth. But the less associated, the less affinity you have with things that you have to build, at times of birth doesn't prevent you from seeing the reality. When Lady Zena Devasagon says, I see nothing but beauty, she knows that oppression is an act of art. And she knows that whatever an oppressor does has no meaning in my soul. Yes, oppression is bad, but it's an act of art. But this act of art was a sign. One who is oppressing is oppressing their own soul. But the recipient of that oppression, no. They see it as an act of art, and they see only themselves as the sole reason for them to grow or not to grow. And they won't be affected by the oppressor's actions. If the oppressor does something, and then you either approve of it or do something in favor of it, yes, then you would be suffering, the soul will suffer. Or, for example, if you were to give in and say, why is this happening? You would suffer. You question these things. Why is this happening to me? Why is it happening to others then? And these are very delicate issues. If you go deep down into each of them, you see that in all respects of this, the affinity we're building with these constructs. When A kills B, no one is saying A is doing something good. No one is saying oppression is good. No, oppression is really happening. But not to B. A is oppressing himself. The reason why we say, oh, poor being is being oppressed and we feel sorry is because of that construct that we made out of that act. But B need not be suffering at all. If you come and support B, you are elevated. If you become oblivious to B, you would be. B at T equals zero is not finger pressed. Depending on how they see that, then they would be oppressed or not. But it's in these pronouns. Any questions? So children, you can imagine a child with cancer and a 60-year-old with cancer. Actually, the child understands much less and may undergo much less pain than the 60-year-old who is fully drowned in the world. I think that's something that's lost something. The child hasn't reached that maturity of making, being drowned in the world. Yes. And that will come and favor the child. The child won't be pressing oneself because she's not understanding the process. The 60-year-old may be even oppressing oneself with that illness by saying, why is it so late? Abuses a child, when A abuses a child, A is oppressing him or herself and destroying the soul. But the soul of the child is being destroyed. Maybe physically for me and you on the outside, and that's also because of this mental construct. But sitting on behalf of the child, that child, him or herself, at T equals zero is not being abused, is not abusing oneself. And if at T equals one, because they haven't reached that maturity of defining or saying what's happening, they won't fall in that trap either. The children is not as bad as you think. Maybe over time, but then if the impact which is made on the child, first the child can't process these impacts at the beginning. It depends on how society teaches this impact. Yes, in a society or parents or school, children frown on it tomorrow, they will teach the child on the impact in a negative way. And the child grows and may say, what is happening? No one is taking away from the abuser, don't get me wrong. But that child, because it's the product of the time that he or she is living in, the child, even in the future, can only be abused. The soul can only be abused through him or herself. And if it's taught properly about the end or not, whatever, or it will tell them as much. Minutes ago, they said, oh, I don't think we're thinking of only this tradition, or one of us. In this tradition, it has 9 prescriptions of spiritual warfare. It has many points I wanted to go over, but I only mentioned this one point. Before the Imam gives the 9 prescriptions, we don't benefit at least from the explicit meaning of the prescriptions. Those prescriptions each of them have an esoteric understanding of them. But before he gives 9 practical steps, he gives an introduction. And in the introduction is how to find truth or certainty. And in that introduction he says 3 things. And the first of those 3 things, man, the servant, should not see for himself that which Allah has given him as his own property. So we should introduction to 9 steps. When the truth of servitude, the first point is, don't see